Oregon is famous for Douglas fir trees. Lots of other trees, too, sure, but Doug firs are highly important both in and out of the forest, as central to the ecosystems when standing, as critical to the timber industry when fallen. The issue right now is Douglas firs prone to falling all by themselves. Tens of thousands or more of the trees are sick or dead in southwest Oregon. Drought and bug infestation have double-teamed them. Let's hear more about the situation and the causes. Two guests, Vince Randall in the studio with me. He's from the Bureau of Land Management, where he's the forest manager for the Grants Pass Resource Area. Vince, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's fun.
Bill Schopp is with us as well. He's with the U.S. Forest Service. He's an entomologist working in the Office of Forest Health Protection. He's based in Medford. Hi, Bill.
Good morning.
Good to have you both here. Vince, would you give us the local picture within your resource area? It sounds like it's very hard hit.
You know, it first showed up off Ferris Gulch out in the Applegate, which is on the Ashland resource areas, mm-hmm. where we first heard of there's a local logger that lives at the end of the road a couple of years ago complaining about the mortality around his neighborhood. It is just starting to express itself in Grants Pass. We've got pockets of mortality scattered around. We're going to start horse logging in Cathedral Hills trail system. The flathead fir borers are just starting to really get going in that part of our resource area. And we thought using our local horse logger to log the trail system and create a little safer environment for our publics would be a great way to treat the issue out there.
Is the horse logging just to keep it a more low-impact kind of logging operation?
Correct. And, you know, obviously it's horse trails and hiking trails, and logging equipment is a little bit wider than horse. So we could stay on the trail system itself for the most part and deal with it. And, you know, Cathedral Hills is a very popular horse trail system. So,
and this is south of Grants Pass?
Yes, mm-hmm. just south.
So, Bill Schopp, if you would, give us a sense for the broader region and how widespread the damage is to the Douglas firs and how many trees we're talking about here.
Well, first of all, you know, having been trained as a forest entomologist, we spend a lot of time concerning ourselves with creatures that kill large areas of trees, like bark beetles. And the flat-headed fir borer is not a bark beetle at all. The normal role that it has in the forest ecology is as a part of the cleanup crew. There's three families of insects, one of which is wasps, two beetles, that start eating the dead and dying trees. They're the cleanup crew. And the flat-headed fir borer, which has the exciting name Phenops drumundi.
I noticed that, yeah.
Yes, in the family Buprestidae, which are known as flat-headed borers or metallic or jewel beetles. This insect is, unlike most, almost every insect in its group, capable of killing trees that are under stress and that already have problems. But if you want to put it this way, they don't wait for the hotel to open. They open it themselves. And this phenomenon actually is much more widespread than I had realized. The local story is that in 1970s, there was a drought. There was a lot of dead and dying Douglas fir down here in southwest Oregon. And the state and federal entomologists came down here and, to their surprise, did not find the Douglas fir beetle as the primary actor. That is a bark beetle. And so I have a record now from the 70s of the estimated number of trees that have been killed in our area by this insect, and it matches drought periods basically becoming worse a year or two or sometimes three after the worst of the drought. But the flat-headed fir borer has actually been killing trees in this way in Central California, in Northern California, along the Willamette, the edge of the Willamette Valley, in Idaho as well. So this appears to be more widespread than we thought.
So I mean, we have a number of trees. I mean, I noticed one figure that the Daily Courier in Grants Pass out 127,000 was your estimate.
Yes, actually, these estimates come from aerial survey. These are two human beings in a small airplane, a state employee on one side and a federal employee from my group, Forest Health Protection, on the other. So you have the Oregon Department of Forestry cooperatively with the USDA Forest Service. And they fly at 100 miles an hour, literally, are looking out the window a couple of miles each, and they try to estimate the amount of mortality that they see that's brand new each year. And by the way, that's been done since 1947, and those data are online. The estimate of 129,000 trees is, of course, very approximate, but it is covers an area south of Eugene and north of the California border and west of the Cascade Crest. Most of this is in the low-lying areas. It's below 3,500 feet in altitude almost entirely.
So that would seem to correspond with the areas where the winter was not especially cold. We're talking years of drought and warmth.
Exactly. And one of the worst, in 2013, we had about 43% of normal precipitation in the area at large, from Roseburg south and here as well. In addition, it was very hot. In fact, just to throw some numbers around, from 2013 to 2015, 26 out of those 36 months had below average precipitation, and 32 of them had above average temperatures. So what we had was not just a drought, but an extreme drought, and in fact, a hot extreme drought.
We're talking about Douglas fir mortality in southwest Oregon, and it appears to be extensive from what you're hearing. Bill Schopp is with the U.S. Forest Service. He's an entomologist with Forest Health Protection. Vince Randall is with the Bureau of Land Management. He's the forest manager for the Grants Pass Resource Area. You can join the conversation. Questions, comments, observations of your own, perhaps, about Douglas firs in trouble in your neighborhood. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Vince Randall, what do you do when you get a die off? I mean, it sounds like, particularly in areas where there's some foot traffic and people hanging around, you want to get the trees down.
True. You know, we're trying very hard to deal with the hazard tree situation. It's a little bit easier in our environmental regs to deal with safety hazards than it is a widespread mortality where we have to do, an EA, and those take time. We're a little bit behind the curve in dealing with the flathead issue that we have. Many of the trees that we're cutting, or most of the trees that we will cut at Cathedral Hills, have gone bad. They no longer have merchantable value to them. So we're going to pay to get the pure hazard trees down, and the ones that have some merchantability in them, we will try and horse log out, and in other areas use mechanized equipment to get out. But currently we're kind of just chasing around the hazard tree safety situation. Long-term goals would be to try and treat the stands themselves that aren't a hazard, but that takes time, and time is what we don't have currently.
Outside of Cathedral Hills, do you have other concerns, camping areas, other places where there's recreation going on, where people hang out, and you want to make sure the trees don't fall on them?
Correct. Yeah, that would be tragic, and we're widespread looking at places and trails and campgrounds where we're seeing sign of the flathead and trying to prepare ourselves to do some harvesting, or at least getting the trees on the ground.
Bill Schopp, the way you describe the work of the flat-headed fir borer, it sounds kind of almost like an opportunistic infection, that it just finds a situation where there's a tree already weakened and goes into work.
Well, that's a very accurate way of putting it. These are opportunistic insects that have a role most of the time with, say, a tree that's been burned to the point where it's nearly dead, or a tree that falls down, a tree that snaps. So this really is an opportunistic situation. The problem with that, of course, is that because their activity is episodic, there hasn't been a lot of research. In fact, almost none. And so I've been trying to interest people in who are researchers into trying to understand more about this insect. And what we've been doing is trying to characterize the habitat where it occurs, the places where this phenomenon is taking place. And I want the listeners to know this is not across the entire range of Douglas fir by any means. It's below 3,500 feet. These are harsh sites that are typically not where industry is interested in the work that they do in growing trees.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also worth mentioning that many of these Douglas fir trees are growing in places where they are actually not that well suited, particularly when stressed by the weather.
That was my next question, is if whether these are relatively small specimens of Douglas firs that are getting attacked.
Well, actually, it's worth expanding the conversation just a little bit, that there are other sizes of Douglas fir that are responding, are actually being killed as a consequence of our drought and our hot temperatures. Anyone driving up Interstate 5 will see small trees in groups that are also being killed. There are other insects and tree disease-causing organisms that are active as opportunists under the same drought stress. So it's not just everywhere, and certainly it's not just the flathead. But in trying to characterize the locations, this is how we're going to try to help Vince and the U.S. Forest Service and any land manager who's trying to figure out where this might take place. One of the most obvious places where one can see this is in oak stands, places where there's a lot of Oregon white oak.
Mm-hmm.
If you tune your eyes, you'll see there are a lot of standing gray sticks that extend up above the oak canopy. Those are almost invariably dead Douglas fir that have been killed by the flat-headed fir borer.
Is it the fir borer's munching itself that kills the trees, or some pathogen carried by the bugs?
Oh, it's actually the munching itself. Mm-hmm. I have managed to look into that somewhat, and the curious feature of this insect is that it's capable, first of all, the females lay their eggs on the outside of the tree. They don't enter the tree, and they don't have any kind of chemical that attracts their buddies the way bark beetles do. So they lay their egg. This little tiny creature eats its way into the living, growing part of the tree, the cambium, which is making more wood and more bark. And they eat that specifically. But if the tree is doing rather well, they can't overcome the tree.
Oh, okay.
And they'll actually get killed. And you'll find a pitch pocket in that particular ring if you look at the tree later on.
So the trees that get killed have no defenses left, basically.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And so what they're doing is they're eating the part of the tree that produces, if you remember from high school, xylem up and phloem down.
Oh, right. Sure.
It produces more phloem, and that needs to be renewed fairly often for the food to come down from the needles that are doing photosynthesis. And when that is doesn't work anymore, then the tree starts to basically run out of food, and also it runs out of water because it can't make more fine root hairs.
All right, you never know what's going to generate phone calls. We actually have three waiting to talk about the Douglas fir die-offs.
Oh, sure.
With Vince Randall from BLM and Bill Schopp from the Forest Service. Here's Steve and Eugene. Welcome to the Exchange.
Buddy, I was wondering if there's a certain age range that these little buggers are particularly fond of, A, and B, is OSU or any of the other agricultural colleges working on pheromones or genetic modification or whatever tools they have at hand to fight these little buggers?
All right, thanks. Steve?
Well, first of all, in answer to your question, trees about 4 inches in diameter or larger are the subjects of the flatheads attacks, and there is no upper limit. It's about stress.
All right, so it's as big as they can get.
Secondarily, as far as we know, they respond to chemicals that come from the trees. You can trap these insects with alcohol, for example, which is a chemical that trees under drought stress will actually give off. So they're responding to something like that. As far as genetic modification, I know of no work at all that anyone's doing on this insect other than me at the moment, trying to understand as I said, trying to look at its habitat. It has a lot of natural enemies. I have seen that activity. Obviously, not enough to satisfy us. They have wasps that lay eggs on their larvae through the bark, paralyzing them and eating them alive.
Wow.
Among other things.
All the fun things of the animal kingdom, yeah.
Yeah. But no, nobody's... I think what... On a larger picture, I think as we see these droughts getting hotter and more frequent, that what we call secondary agents, both disease-causing organisms and insects, are going to come to the fore because of the opportunities that are created.
Well, and that was a question I had, too, about the not so much genetic engineering with the bugs, but with the trees, whether there is some effort to find out what, I mean, is there something that could make a tree stronger in drought circumstances? I guess that's the kind of trait you'd have to breed
well,
for.
That's Vince's domain.
All right, Vince?
Yeah, you know, it would help if we could thin our stands. Our stands are way overstocked. We live in a, you know, we have hot, dry summers. And historically or prehistorically, we had frequent fires. Most of Southwest Oregon had about a 10 to 20 year fire return interval, and we've missed many of those cycles. So our stands are pretty dense, and it stresses the trees, and obviously in a drought situation, pathogens will overwhelm them.
Are there thinning projects directly aimed at reducing the danger of Douglas firs within BLM in this resource area?
Yes, we're trying to do that as much as humanly possible, but it's hard to keep up. We've missed many, many cycles of disturbance in our environment, and you see when you walk around and you can walk on the trail, hard to walk off the trail.
Right.
Because it's so thick out there.
There's so much manzanita and brush and other competition.
Let's take another call here. We have John and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking Douglas firs with Vince Randall and Bill Schopp.
I think Vince largely just answered my question. I was going to ask, is this being viewed in an ecosystem management view as opposed to this bug is doing this bad thing? What are we going to do about this bug? So you may rehash it, but, yeah, the fire thing is big. So more of an ecosystem view than just a this bug. Is that being taken?
All right. So thanks for that, John. So are you looking at it broadly in that way? It's like, how do we make this ecosystem whole?
You know, we're looking at it hard. We're looking at our forest management on more of a landscape level, forest health treatment. It's just very difficult to accomplish that with all of our rules and regulations, and we're evolving over time, and I think we're doing a much better job, but currently we're overwhelmed.
So the point is you have to go through the whole NEPA process, so we're talking about potentially an environmental impact statement and all the other paperwork that comes with that and several phases of it.
Correct. If usually not an environmental impact statement, but at least an environmental assessment, which takes quite a bit less time and effort, but it's still years.
All right.
Well, and if I might interject, my group, Forest Health Protection, though hosted by the Forest Service, assists all federal and tribal forest land managers. So I work with the Forest Service and the tribes and so on. And this issue is fairly widespread. One of the things that does help from to address the caller's statement about ecosystems, there are places such as oak stands and the edges between oak and Doug fir where this mortality is really not that much of a problem. And in fact, you might think of it as killing trees that are growing where they don't belong in a way.
Okay.
And but on the other hand, there's a lot more of it than just that.
Sure.
So the agencies are able to make this distinction, and I think it's important to point that out. That, you know, just because a tree dies doesn't mean it's the end of the world, but it depends where it is and how many.
All right, that makes a lot of sense. About a minute and a half left. Here's a call from John and Vanita. Welcome to the Exchange with Bill Schopp and Vince Randall.
Well, good morning, guys.
Morning.
Yeah, up here in Eugene area, we've got spots here and there. You can see it, you know, where they're dying.
Mm-hmm.
And it really grabs my eye. I grew up around here and in the woods and all that. And I've really been sensitive to it. It's really, it's troubled me. And there's two things I was interested in. One is, are you guys, or is anyone going to try to make folks realize and be aware of the potential fire danger they can have on this rural properties? I look at it, I size it up. I used to be a wildland firefighter, and I see why they try and get a hose laying in that mess, and it'll all be burned up by the time they got there. They got yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. And then the other thing is, and I may step on some toes, but there's been so much horrible neglect or mismanagement, however you want to put it, in the forest, where they've done reprod, and for whatever reason, they didn't follow through and do the thing.
Right.
And those dog hair stands are getting sick and blistering and dying, and they're weak and vulnerable. And I'm wondering if this flathead bug would be one of those creatures that could find that and then wham.
All right. We got about just a little less than a minute left to address what you're talking about. And Vince, fire danger and management.
You know, it's a big issue, and I'm quite concerned about it ourselves. When we were first notified, it was by a logger out on Ferris Gulch, and that was his concern. I've got all these dead and dying trees surrounding my property,
right. And
fellow landowners, please do something. And, you know, we're trying to rally and accomplish those tasks to make things safer for our public.
And Bill, I notice you have some stuff out there to let people know about the flat-headed fir borer and what to look for. Okay. I'll make sure that we get a link to that on our website.
The Oregon Department of Forestry has an excellent leaflet about the insect.
Okay. Bill Schopp at Forest Health Protection, Vince Randall, the Bureau of Land Management. Thanks for joining us today to talk about Douglas fir death in Southwest Oregon.
Thanks.
Thanks.